Good afternoon and welcome to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
We're going to be taking your calls at the numbers you just heard in just a couple of minutes, but right now we're going to start with the news, and we'll start with Steve and the Macintosh.
We have Macworld San Francisco coming up the second week in January, so a lot of rumors are starting to fly about what's going to be released. And we actually have some confirmation of a rumor in this case. ATI is going to launch their new Radeon 8500 card, the Mac edition. The Radeon is their latest super whiz-bang card, 250 megahertz for the graphics card. It's almost amazing.
Yeah, really?
64 meg of DDR memory, capable of handling 2.4 billion texels per second. Whatever a texel is, that's an awful lot of them.
A texel?
It says texel, not pixel, or polygon.
It's a mathbook.
Well, it's an ATI thing. Most of the video cards will rate themselves in how many billions of polygons they can render, so you can get that many more Quake frames out of it.
Exactly.
The 8500 card has a digital output on it and an analog output on it for dual monitor support. 3D resolutions up to 2048 by 1536, so you can see those really microscopic prints on your 15-inch
so
monitor.
The gamer's dream.
Apple's been using NVIDIA cards in their Power Mac series, and they've been using ATI cards in all the other models. So for the gamers that really want the Super Whiz-Bang card, now the Radeon 8500 will be available, both in the AGP 2X and 4X.
Just in time to miss Christmas.
Apparently, yeah. Well, Christmas in January
well,
stale.
They didn't say what... That's it.
They didn't say what Christmas, though.
You know what? As long as you can download a picture of it from the net, you put that under the tree, the kid gets in January, everybody wins.
Close enough, yeah.
Exactly.
You hope.
Dave, what's going on in the hardware world?
AMD is nibbling away at Intel. I mean, Intel has always been, you know, the big leader on the direction of other chips, both... AMD and Cyrix. I mean, they've more or less set the path, Intel. Now, Intel is taking the back seat because AMD is literally walking away with it. Last year, at this time, third quarter, they had about 24% of the market. Right now, for this quarter, third quarter of this year, AMD is holding 49% of the home desktops sold in Western Europe during this past quarter. So they're, you know, more and more nibbling away. One, they've got, you know, they can always offer it for a little bit less, but they're still the folks that still like to have the warm fuzzy of having an Intel inside, although unless they put it on the screen, which you and I got, Nick,
long ago.
Just to tell the folks a quick story, we gave Intel a great idea on how to show that there's an Intel inside, and that's, splash it on the screen when you turn on their computer.
I know, the first thing that takes over is the Intel. You would have the feeling that they could do anything they wanted, but they never did.
Because I went right up to, when I was at Comdex, the guy says, well, it's got the sticker on here. I peeled the sticker off and put it on another computer and said, no, that says Intel inside. How do you know it doesn't?
Intel motherboards will come with an Intel splash screen that OEMs can replace with their own logo.
Right.
But that's only the motherboards. But the other problem that Intel is running into is they're borrowing some... marketing from the advertising of Apple in the megahertz myth. Intel chips are clocked slightly slower than AMD chips, but actually run faster.
Yep, right.
So there's the megahertz problem that it's a slower chip, but it is faster.
But the thing of it is that's the whole logic that they're trying to get away from in all the chips, trying to get away from, it's a 1.4 gigahertz. They're trying to go to this specific names because of the clock cycles. With the newer chips, they're doing more tasks in one clock cycle than the original chips, so they do technically run faster, even though they're rated lower.
Yeah, plus, the average user isn't going to notice the difference between a 1.4 and a 1.6 anyway.
That's right. But the reality is it's always been that way. Everybody talks about cubic inches displacement in your engine.
Well, that actually meant something.
No, it's the torque in the transmission that was important.
400 foot-pounds and 400 horsepower.
That's exactly right, but nobody ever paid attention to that. In the Microsoft world, there are a couple of things. If you're running XP, Windows has the Windows Media Bonus Pack available. It's a free download, so you should go and get that. If you're using Internet Explorer, there is... I know it. There is a bug in Internet Explorer, and there is a patch finally available on Microsoft's website, so you could go get that. Service Pack 1 for Microsoft Office XP is available. It fixes a whole bunch of bugs, as BOFH said in the forums. I wonder what they broke while they were fixing the other stuff.
Features.
So if you're a Microsoft user, and I believe at least one of you out there listening to us is, if you're running XP, if you're running Windows or Office XP, and if you're running Internet Explorer, there's stuff for you to get. And also, don't forget about the viruses. There are a massive number of them. Get an antivirus software. I'm not going to mention any names of people I had dinner with on Wednesday, but if you're not running an antivirus program, you should be.
Well, I just got one from my father-in-law that dated back from 1998.
Right.
And what it will do is it's called the W95CIH.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what it'll do is, evidently, it's reared its ugly head again, and it's floating around on a Christmas.exe file. So if you get a file that an attachment from a friend that's a Christmas.exe, it has this virus in it. And what it will do is, on the 26th of every month, try to rewrite your BIOS.
Right, that would be...
very bad.
Bad. That's what it would be, bad. We're going to go to the phones now. If you're calling in the 585 area code, it's 222-1180. If you're on the Choice 1 toll-free line, that's 800-295-1180 for those of you outside the 585 area code. And if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, it's star 1180 on your Verizon Wireless cell-type car phone thing. So we're...
You said that real gracefully.
That's right. Well, anyway, we have Jim from Springwater on the line. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Thank you. I just have a question on whether an upgrade will help me or not. I have a 56K external modem. I'm running Windows 98 second edition, an AMD K62100, 160 mega RAM. I'm using Real Player 8 Basic. I have bad radio reception, so I'd like to try and get radio, internet radio. I spend more time caching than I do listening.
Yes, you do. Mm-hmm.
If I upgrade to, say, a 1.4 gig processor...
No.
With more RAM, will that...
No.
DSL.
Sorry.
DSL or Roadrunner.
You have to go broadband.
I'm in Springwater. I'm not going to get either one.
Yeah, I realize that. The problem is not the speed of your... You said you're at a K200?
Right.
That's a little slow, but it's not about the speed of your processor. In that case, what you'd end up with is if you were trying to do three or four things at once, your music would sound bad.
Right.
Would skip and stuff.
Well, if I'm listening to music, I can't do anything else.
Right,
so
that's right.
I need to upgrade for that, but would it help me?
No, unfortunately, the problem is that 56K modem.
Right.
And unfortunately, there's no real way around that. There are other things you can do. You can download your own MP3s and then play them off your hard drive.
Well, my wife likes to listen to XXI AM.
Right.
And we can't get it.
Right, and you can only get it off the net.
Only get it off the net, and like I said, we spend more time waiting for it to cache than we do listening to the radio.
Exactly right, and it is a problem that is not really solvable with a 56K modem.
There are satellite internet companies, DSS and some of the other direct PC.
But they're going to be a little more expensive.
But they're a lot more expensive than Roadrunner or DSL.
Sorry.
Is there any... advances going on with the DSL to get it to be able to go out farther?
The problem really becomes the distance that it'll go from the closest central office to your house.
Right. I had read something on one of the newsletters that I get that said that they were working on that and they were trying to double the distance.
Well, Frontier, I know for sure, is trying to add more and more points that they can then branch out and get to people. Yeah. And this is all going to take time and money.
And they are working on, in the labs, they're working on getting a much greater distance, but it's a tough thing to do right at the moment.
Right.
Okay?
Okay, thanks.
Sorry about that. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back in just a couple of minutes on WHAM 1180 with Soundbite. Yes, I am Nick Francesco. You're watching Soundbites with me and with Dave Enright and with Steve Ray. And on the line, we have John from Henrietta. Welcome, John. What's your question?
I've got a probably simple question for you.
Questions are always simple, John. It's the answers that are hard.
We have to get creative.
I use a program called WINMX, which is a music sharing file.
Sure.
And I was downloading a song the other night, and for some reason it booted me into safe mode.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know why that happens?
Oh, yeah. After you booted it, you were trying to run it?
No, I was actually trying to download a song by a certain group.
Yeah. There are a couple of things that will do that. The first thing that it could be is if you were doing too many things in memory. WinMX is not terrifically good with memory management.
A lot of leaks.
A lot of leaks in it. And if you were doing too many other things at the same time, or you'd been downloading for a good long while, it can cause a memory problem.
Okay.
And then the system will reboot.
Okay.
The second thing is if you were downloading it and playing it simultaneously, and it wasn't really a song but some sort of virus. What antivirus program are you running?
Pardon me?
What antivirus
Norton.
Program? And when was the last time you updated it?
I just bought a new processor about a week ago.
When was the last time you updated Norton?
I haven't.
My suggestion would be immediately going up to the Norton website and updating your software.
Okay.
Instantly, if not sooner.
Do not go
feel
open
free to
any
finish
emails.
This call first. Yeah, don't open any emails. Don't download anything. Don't do anything. Do that first.
Okay.
It is more likely that it was a memory problem.
Okay.
But if you have not updated your antivirus software, you must do so immediately, or we won't eat dinner with you either.
Well, that's something to keep in mind, that all these public file sharing networks were back in the olden days of copying files from who knows whose computer, who knows where.
Right.
You're relying on them to say what the file really is. And
right. Back in the old days when we had BBSs, we BBS operators guaranteed that we were running the latest antivirus software against the files before you got them.
And I do have one quick question, too.
Sure.
After I got out of safe mode, all my icons and my writing came up huge. And I don't know. I actually don't know how to get out of that.
You just right-click on the anywhere it's on the desktop, go to Properties, and in the settings for the monitor, you can go to settings and change your resolution to 256 colors or 800 by 600.
What probably happened?
Do I go to setup or?
Yeah, settings.
Okay.
Right-click on the desktop, select properties.
Okay.
One of the tabs will be display.
Okay.
And that's where you want to be.
Okay.
What probably happened is when you were in safe mode, the resolution of your monitor set back to 640 mode.
In fact, that's one of the definitions of safe mode. It stops running anything except standard VGA.
And when you booted back into normal mode, it didn't go back to your resolution, which could have been 1024 or 1152, one of the bigger ones.
Right.
Correct.
Okie doke.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, John. Our next caller is Steve from Rochester. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Yeah, I have a question about an email that I received the other day from a cousin of mine. It had an attachment, and when I went to open it, it said that I had to go to My Computer and click on Options and create what's called an association to open it.
What was the name of the file?
It said c.dtf.
DTF.
DTF?
Yeah, well, that was the attachment. I'm sorry.
Yeah. What happens is that every file has to be associated with an application. Typically, a .doc is Microsoft Word. .txt is a text file. So what it's telling you is your system doesn't know what to do with a DTF file. And offhand, none of us have ever heard of it either.
Yeah, there's a list out on the net somewhere of every file type ever made, but I don't have my machine here, so I don't have...
There's a link on your website, Nick, that's broken, because I always go there to find
know.
It.
Yes, I know. Last night I found a new one, and it was very late, and I was tired, and I didn't update it, but I'll update it.
If you go to whatis.com, that's an IT technical dictionary.
Okay.
And you may be able to find that file type association to see what a DTF is. Or you can just email your cousin back and ask him what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
You're right. Your cousin ought to know what he or she put in the file.
And if they didn't put anything in the file, then it's probably a virus.
That's right. What antivirus software are you running?
I have my original Norton antivirus.
Yeah.
If you have not updated it, that would be very bad.
A lot of folks are, hear us constantly telling folks and preaching to folks, and it's been on the message board quite a bit. Well, you folks think viruses are most of the problems. Yes, 90% of them since August, we have, I think just in my shop alone, eliminated over 120,000 files infected by viruses.
Yeah, here it is. Such documents. This is, it seems like your cousin is using Lotus Notes. And an older version thereof, that's a file attachment. C.dtf is a file attachment that often comes along with Lotus Notes files. It's a nothing file. You may delete it.
It's like the win.dat that Microsoft Mail sends along.
Constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can just delete it.
Okay, great.
Okie doke.
Thank you very much.
But update your antivirus software.
Just in case.
Yes, I will.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Our next caller on Sound Bites will be Bill from Rochester. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hi. I'm having a trouble with my Mac. I downloaded AOL Instant Messenger, and I keep getting a Type 3 error, which is a resource problem. And I have 128 megabytes of RAM, and I've deleted a lot of cache trying to, you know, keep the RAM free, but I can't get it to work.
Is this while you're running it or while you're trying to install it?
Well, when you first start up the computer, it starts itself up automatically.
So it's after you've already installed it.
And yes, okay. And I tried deleting it and reinstalling it, but I keep getting the Type 3 error.
It's possible that it was a bad download, although usually that problem crops up during install.
And it did work at first. And now it doesn't work anymore.
That might be a corrupt preferences. If you go into your system folder, preference folder, there should be an AOL or America Online preference folder that basically stores what your screen name is and your buddy list and things like that. Those preference files can get corrupted also. It also could be an extension conflict with something else that you have in your system.
Okay.
There are two AOL or AIM extensions. One is called Idle Time, and it actually is the skull of a dead cow on the icon.
Of course it is. It's got to be if it's a Mac.
So if while you're booting your machine, that little picture that looks like a dead cow skull, that's part of the AOL Instant Messenger. We don't know why they picked that icon.
Huh.
I guess it's an Old West theme where you have the cows in the background. Yeah. And then the other one is the actual AOL AIM file itself.
I'm running, actually, to tell you the truth, I'm running Explorer. What is it, 5.1?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm using an AT&T.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. It should still work fine.
Okay.
But I think what Steve said is right. It could easily be the preferences folder.
Okay, preferences folder. But one more comment. 2 weeks ago, you guys were talking to a guy that was getting duplicate addresses.
Yeah.
In his Microsoft Works or Outlook.
Outlook. Mm-hmm.
And at work, I have a UPS program for shipping,
mm-hmm.
and we've been getting duplicate addresses where the address comes back on its own with two of them, and some deleted addresses come back that you got rid of. And I was wondering if a virus was doing that.
Very well could be, because there's over, you know, that's why we keep preaching it. There's over 59,000 variations of viruses. A lot of these kids will sit there and take an old virus and make a few modifications and bring it back out there.
Yeah.
But it depends on what your software, how your software is, the UPS software is written.
Yes.
If it's in a database, it is more likely a corrupted index that's causing that problem.
So it forgot what you had deleted and it came back.
And it puts it back.
The problem is, if you have a corrupted index, you may very well also be losing real addresses you're putting in.
Okay.
So you need to talk to whoever the database administrator is at your place or whoever runs your UPS software.
Right.
Tell them this problem is happening. They may well know what to do, but one thing they should definitely try is if there is a re-indexing function in the software, they should use it.
For that program.
Did
you get the latest version? I think they just came out with a newer version.
They did, but I already have it.
Oh, okay.
We've also heard from a lot of our customers that UPS is telling them not to use the software on their computer and use the web interface and do everything from the web.
Oh, yeah?
Because then UPS keeps track of the stuff and it's in their database.
Right.
Yeah.
Makes more sense because theirs is more up to date.
Yeah, okay.
But anyway, give that a try.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bill.
Bye.
Our next caller is John from Rochester. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Morning. Good
morning.
Show, Bill.
Thank you.
The risk is setting off, Dave. I've got Windows ME, but it came with a machine.
But you know, someday somebody's going to call with both a Windows ME and virus question. Dave's head is going to explode. Go ahead. What's your story, John?
Okay, now, to upgrade to XP, you guys have suggested the clean install.
Yeah, scrape the hard drive clean.
Does that mean you have to buy the $199 full version of
it? No, if you're going to do, which, matter of fact, I had another gentleman that I've been trying to email him back. He same thing. He bought a system from me, wound up putting ME on my machine.
Unbelievable.
And now he's running problems, and he asked me why. Really? And I said, well, you threw ME on it. Enough said. But, no, key thing on XP is, one, you got to set a lot of time aside, because it's going to take a good hour and 45 minutes to do the install.
If you know what you're doing, and you do it all right the first time.
Okay.
But the key thing to do is, if you have your ME machine, and I hate saying that, up and running, make sure there is nothing running in the taskbar. If you've got an antivirus program running, any real players, literally shut that down to so nothing is running in the resources.
But if
then go ahead and put your CD, if you're going to the home edition in that, you can put the CD in and it'll start the install and 99% of the time work decently. But then you also have to go to the website and get connected and get the updates.
But if you're going to wipe your hard drive and install XP on a fresh empty hard drive,
you can do NTFS FAT.
Right. The upgrade version of XP will ask for your original disk you're upgrading from, so it doesn't actually have to be on the computer.
Okay, but that's the three-disk recovery. But I should be able
to... Oh, you don't have a real...
No, I don't have ME.
Yeah. Well,
it's on there.
Then you can do an upgrade, but now you're running under FAT32 as opposed to running NTFS, which is slower and less secure. But if it's just your machine, it doesn't really matter.
But the upgrade will let you switch to NTFS
later on in the install. Yeah.
In the install.
Wasn't there also an issue of what XP would upgrade from? It would upgrade from 2000, but not 98. Wasn't there something?
No, it'll do 98 ME in 2000,
but not 95.
It won't
correct.
Do 95 or anything
or 3.1.
And it won't upgrade from anything else.
So if you have one of the really old OSs, you have to buy the full. You're probably better off buying the full version of it anyway. It helps with reinstalling later again, so you don't have to find those.
Yeah, the real
discs.
Problem is going to be if you ever have to reinstall, since you do not have an original disk.
Okay.
That's always been a big problem with these discs that you get that have stuff like that on them. I hate them.
Okay, so for less problems down the road, do you guys would suggest the $199?
Bite the bullet, pay the money, you'll be better off later on.
Okay.
And if you're going to do it fresh, go to the NTFS FAT. You'll love it.
Okay. We're going to take a quick...
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you very much. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Dave Enright, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
With Nick, Dave, and Steve is here every Saturday from 12:20 till 2 to answer any and all computer and computer-related questions. Now, back to Nick Francesco on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Yes, indeed, it is Soundbites, and we have Chip from China. Eli on the line. Welcome, Chip. What's your question?
I got a question on a writable CD drive. I have a compact 5838 with Windows 98 second edition, and I installed a read-write drive on the thing when I bought the computer. Never got it to, I could get it to read, but never get it to write. Doesn't seem to want to find a driver or that kind of thing. And after a while, I gave up. I didn't get anywhere with Compact. I ended up out of warranty. I didn't obviously have a lot of demand for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I purchased recently, in June, another read-write. I had a buy and I got a creative read-write drive, replaced the other one. I thought, I'd have it. Well, got the same thing occurring. It will read that drive. I can play music from it, read files from it, whatever. But when I go to write, it just...
How much memory?
Pardon?
How much memory is in the machine?
I think I have 128.
Okay. When you installed it, when you bought this drive, did it come with a driver?
Are you using Easy Creator or Roxio?
Actually, it came with the driver CE Quadrat when I bought it, and actually it had that. That's what came with it, brand new. Okay.
Yeah.
And in fact, the reason I got a runaround is Compaq said, you got to contact CE Quadrat, which is a German company.
Is this the first drive or the second drive?
This is the second drive.
Okay, and you to get the current driver.
Yeah, but see, the software, Roxio or Easy Creator, because he is, Windows 98 will see the CD-ROM as a plain CD-ROM drive.
Right.
But to set it up as a burner, you've got to have either the Roxio or the Easy Creator, which will install all the drivers correctly for burning and, doing multiple burns. And what version of did they give you? Is it Easy Creator or Roxio?
Yeah, I can't remember. I'm sitting at the computer. How do I find that?
That's the whole software. Where you've got to use to do a burn.
If you go to the start button and click programs, you should see a program group that either says AdaptTech or Roxio.
Or Easy Clean.
Or Easy Creator, but usually it's AdaptTech.
I'm looking down through what I have there, and...
If you don't see those, then the problem is you have no software that will write to the CD writer.
Okay.
You need to get either the Roxio software at roxio.com.
Okay. R-O?
No, the burners all come with software on.
Not necessarily. If it's a, if you
if
buy
it's
a
an
raw,
OEM version,
yeah,
you don't
raw
get
OEM
that.
Drive.
Well, the one I have on now is not is one that I purchased, a Creative Drive that I
then
purchased.
Then somewhere with that you got a CD that's got all kinds of software, including the driver for it and all this other
stuff. Right, and I did go through that installation process, but
it put an icon somewhere, and that's what you're going to have to find out, even if you do an uninstall, reinstall, because that's the program that you need to do a burn. What you do is when you start up, say, like Easy Creator or Roxio, it opens up a thing that looks like Explorer, so you can sit there and then drag files down from your hard drive to this blank CD, and then they've got a create button, and it'll create it.
Okay.
Most of the time, it adds an icon on your desktop that says create CD.
Okay. Even using the taskbar, most of them.
Yeah.
But if all of that fails, then you do have to have something in the start button under the programs that says either Roxio or AdaptTac
or Creative.
Creative or...
Okay, I got a Creative button here.
What's under it?
And PC DVD.
Nope.
That's for the DVD drive that I have in there.
Right.
In fact, so it...
No, that's the wrong one. What else you got?
And I don't have a rock. We say Roxio.
Roxio.
No.
What do you read them down to me?
I got accessories: Adobe, Merrick Online, Aureal A3D for Compaq, built-in technician CE Quadrat, which was the original one. That's empty. Compaq Utilities. That Creative. Just want to show you HP Precision LT. Scan software, Microsoft Reference, MGI Video Wave, Microsoft Office Tools, Microsoft Press, Mouseware, Parallel Technologies, Professor Franklin, QuickTime, Riven DVD, Sierra, Startup, MS-DOS, Outlook, Windows Explorer, Schedule, Microsoft Schedule.
That sounds like the software got installed.
You might have missed a disk in the CD bundle. There's several different disks. There's usually music software. There's this the burning software. Sometimes they'll even put
Here's the one. I can remember this now that I got with it. It's called Ahead Nero.
Yes, that's
there
it.
You go.
There, okay, I just found it. Now I remember that. See, it's been 6 months.
You got to get that installed, and then you'll be able to burn.
Ahead Nero should be able to burn it, but again, if you did not install the correct drivers, then Nero isn't going to work.
Okay, so I should uninstall that?
Well, no. Try Nero. If it works, you win. If it doesn't, then you haven't installed the drivers correctly. I hate to harp on that, but it sounds like if you did get a CD with the drive, you didn't install it since you seem to have no software on it.
Yeah.
Or you got an OEM version that didn't come with anything, and you don't even have the right driver.
Okay.
So again, you may need to find a driver on the manufacturer's website.
Okay. And this would...
But that Ahead Nero, I've installed it plenty of times, and that should install it for you. And it'll allow you to do music CDs, data CDs. It'll even let you create a backup routine that you can put in a CDRW, and that way you can then, routinely back up your data.
Yeah, okay. So that's...
Give that a shot, though. That should work for you.
Very good. Okay, by the way, do you guys have a shop somewhere around? Do you do service work?
Yeah, I do.
So do I, yeah.
Yeah. We're in the phone book. It's Enright PC Management and...
And Jesse Group.
What is it now?
Enright PC Management.
And then my company is Jesse Group.
Okay,
and I'm on the radio.
Okay.
You're all over.
I'm all over.
He's just a face.
Okay.
I have a face for radio. We're going to take another quick break.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll be back after the news. I'm Nick Francesco. We have Dave Enright, Steve Ray. We are on Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM, the station that loves us. Nick, Dave, and Steve are here? Excellent.
All right.
What do we got? Before we get back to the phones at Sound Bites, we're going to take a look at stuff on the website. As you may know, we have a poll on our website. You can get to it by going to the wham1180.com website, going down to the Soundbites button, the one without a picture, okay, and clicking on that, and that takes you to our website soon. And on there we have a poll. We have the camera with us now. And we have a poll on it. Last week's poll was about the new theme music. We've had
it's scary.
He's looking back at the pictures. One of those guys. No. This is you're the reason Polaroid made so much money in the old days. You got to look at the picture instantly. And the old poll, we've had a lot. We also have a forum where you can leave messages, and we've had a few minor comments about the music. So we had this week's poll. Last week's poll was about the new theme music. The choices were: it's great, it sucks, and who cares? The most number of votes was for sucks. Unfortunately, for those of you who hate the theme music, that was really only 43% of you. So over half of you either like it or don't care. In fact, the next highest number was who cares, followed by it's great. 169 of you voted in the poll, and we want to thank you very much. This week's poll is just a little bit more... less focused, I guess, on the Soundbite site. This is, what do you want for Christmas? And I just picked a half a dozen things I thought we would put on here. The choices are a new computer, a DVD player, a new hard drive, RAM, a PDA, that's a personal digital assistant like the Visor or the Palm Pilot or the iPac. And the other choice is a nice book. So far, a new computer is winning. I'm just waiting for mine, Dave. And followed by a nice book.
Hey, all good things take time.
Yeah. There's 44 votes in the poll so far, so please go to our website. Get there from wham1180.com. Go to the Soundbites
We had to order
button.
New drives.
Yeah. And that is my fault. And then go to the Soundbites poll and vote in the drive. Also, register for the website itself and for the forums. Yeah. And please tell us what city and state you're calling from. But we're going to go back to the phones right now. Here on Soundbites, that's 222-1180 if you're outside the 585 calling area. It's 800-295-1180. If you're a Verizon Wireless customer and you have a cell phone, you can dial tap star 1180 to get on Soundbites. Dave from Avon on the line. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
How you guys doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Pretty good. I have 128 megs of RAM in my computer with a 133 speed.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have 100 speed. Can I put them in together?
Depends on what kind of RAM they are.
SD.
If they're both SD RAM, then it depends on what speed they are and what speed the new machine requires.
And whether the new machine will, accept the 100s and then speed, step down
according to the
133s.
According to the motherboard book, it'll accept either one.
Then you win.
Yeah.
Then it probably will step the one. Well, if it accepts
either,
you sort of win. Yeah. It'll probably step the 133s down to 100, so all of them will run at 100.
Okay.
Right. You'll have more memory, but it'll all run a little slower.
Whether it's noticeably slower is the question.
And certainly, if you don't like the speed after you put the new memory in, take the new memory out.
Yeah.
And then sell it to somebody else and buy 133.
Yep. Well, I was just trying to get away with, not...
Yeah, I understand. But I'm saying, you can certainly, if you do put it in and don't like the speed, you haven't ruined anything, because when you take it out, it'll go back up to the old speed again.
You think there'll be a noticeable difference?
Don't know. It's up to you.
Yeah.
Some
okay.
people will notice it. Some people will convince themselves they noticed it, even though they didn't.
If you're doing a lot of RAM-intensive programs,
Excel.
Which Excel, right.
Graphics.
Calculating huge spreadsheets in RAM. Graphics.
3D design.
Rendering 3D designs. You may notice a difference.
Okay.
All right. Okey-doke.
Thanks.
Thanks, Dave. Our next caller is Scotty from Canandaigua. Welcome, Scotty. What's your question? Scotty, are you there?
Yes.
Yes, what's your question?
Oh, I'm sorry. The time delay got me.
Oh, I apologize. Yeah, see?
Yeah, turn down
you have
radio.
To be ready every second. Oh, and you actually seem to have earned the name Scotty as opposed to just having it thrust upon you, eh?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. What's your question?
I get a lot of email, and I think I've been invaded by spyware and cookies.
No, very possible.
I get tons of stuff of... how to become a minister, how to become a millionaire, how to get a college degree, a lot of graphics that you don't want to hear about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I found something on the Internet very briefly. I'll read it to you quickly. Spy Blocker is an excellent freebie that searches for spyware on your system.
Mm-hmm.
If it finds it, the program disables the spyware and doesn't allow it to send out information or display ads. The program also blocks cookies and prevents ads from being displayed on your browser. I brought it up, and all I can get is, you do not have permission to download this software. Your comments and advice would be appreciated.
Sounds like it's something you have to buy.
I see.
You can try a product called AdAware.
Yeah, it's great.
AdAware is a product that is actually free. And I believe we already have a link to it on our website.
It's from a company called LavaSoft.
It is from LavaSoft, but I think it's out there. Yes, it is. If you go to our website, soundbites.org, if you go to wham1180.com and go down to the lower left and click on the Soundbites button, it'll take you to our website. And then if you go down to the lower right on ours, you'll see a link that says, I heard about a website on your show. And if you go there, you'll see we've already added the neuro-burning CD for today. But on the right-hand side, you'll see the alphabetical list, and the very top one is AdAware. And that will search out ad-related software. I used to have the spyware list, but like Steve said, that link is broken. I just found it last night. I'll have to put the new link on.
A lot of the junk email you get comes from web crawlers that if you do post to forums, if you post to news groups,
if you have a website and your email address is on it.
Right. Web crawlers scan the internet for email addresses and then put you on junk mail list.
It is more likely that what you're experiencing is spam rather than spyware. And the simple fact that somewhere along the line your email address got public.
Well, plus if you go and register a certain site, some websites
will turn around and
sell your whole their whole list.
They're giving away a cool thing, and all they need is your email address.
I like that TV commercial for Earthlink where the guy and the girl in the bar. Can I have your address?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, sure. Here's and then the two guys behind. Can I get that too? Yeah, all right. $5. Sure.
Right, right. That's the same idea. Yeah. And unfortunately, once you're on a spammer's list, it's hard to get off them. There are a couple of places that will purport to take you off those lists, but they don't work as well as you might like.
A lot of times when you, if mail like that has removal instructions, it's almost worse to enter.
Yeah, because then what you are is a live address. There's a human being behind it. One thing I might suggest, what email program are you running?
Microsoft Network, MSN.
MSN, and so you get your mail off the web?
Yes.
Then you want to take a look at their spam blocking stuff. It's under the options or tools or whatever they call it.
Okay.
Called junk mail filter.
Junk mail filter, same idea.
And
so
filter out a lot of that stuff.
Well, I appreciate your assistance. I thank you.
That's what we're here for.
Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you.
You too. Bye. Thanks very much. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Sony 102 plays continuous.
Use the phone, Luke.
I got
and
put
give
down
us
my
a
air
call.
Guitar.
I really like that. Now that's good music. Nobody can say that sucks. That was okay.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, anybody can say that. That's exactly what was I thinking.
Yeah, but it doesn't.
But it doesn't. I'm Nick Francesco. I'm sitting here with Steve Ray, Dave Enright, Rob Linton on the lines. We should let everybody know that Rob is the guy who keeps us on track as much as it's humanly possible to do so.
We're thrust upon him, and he's
doing good with the whip. He's learning to get that wrist action he needs to keep us in line. Our next caller on Soundbites is Pete from Honey Eye Falls. Welcome, Pete. What's your question?
Yeah, following up on a guy of the last hour.
Excellent.
CD burners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there any backup hardware similar to the backup hardware for tape units that will automatically do the backup of, you know, the incremental or the differential backups that we used to be able to do with tape?
Retrospect from Dantz, D-A-N-T-Z.
D-A... N, C E
T Z
T Z.
Yep.
Zebra.
Right. They make a program called Retrospect. They make a personal version, Retrospect Express, for single user backup onto CD or other removable hard drive.
Uh-huh.
They also have network versions that will back up.
Can you schedule that?
Yes.
Put it in a schedule.
It can be scheduled.
Beautiful.
They also have network versions if you want to back up multiple computers on your network. both for Macintosh and Windows. And in fact, the network servers are cross-platform, so you can have one Mac or Windows server backing up Mac or Windows clients. So it's pretty much the only cross-platform solution as well.
Uh-huh.
Now, you got to remember, when you set these up, a lot of folks will sit there and mark their whole hard drive. No, you only want to sit there and...
Well, you can only get 650 meg on a CD to begin with.
Like, it didn't work right.
If
but
you
it
want
will,
to...
If it, when it fills up one disk, it will ask for another.
Yes, it
if
will.
You need to.
If you want to see what that software looks like, go to the WAM 1180 website, WAM1180.com.
Uh-huh.
Go down to the lower left. I'm going to get tired of saying this. Click on the Sound Bites button. That'll take you to our homepage, which you can then bookmark. And then if you go down to the lower right, you'll see...
That was Nick Francesco.
Yeah, that's Nick Francesco, who's possibly on his last weekend. And you go down to the lower right, and you'll see a button that says, I heard a website on the show, Ellipsis.
Uh-huh.
And you click on that one, it'll take you to our website. There's a list of... two lists. One is chronological with today's stuff at the top, and the other is alphabetical, and I just put the retrospect software there.
And they have 30-day free trials that you can download and see if the software works for you.
Super.
There's also big software. The big backup program is ArcServe from, what is it now? They've been sold a bunch of Veritas.
Veritas.
Veritas Backup Exec. But that's more network backup administrators. They don't really have a personal, inexpensive version.
Uh-huh.
Right.
It's amazing that this stuff doesn't come with the printers because, the old adage of...
typically comes with tape drives.
Yeah,
with burners.
Tape drives, yeah.
The thing is, they figure you're going to use a burner to steal... borrow music. off-site backup some of your albums. And so that they usually have a light version of that software. And they may have a light version of a backup software, but there really isn't much of a thing called a light version of backup
software.
Nothing
that you can sit there and really schedule. Yeah, it'll allow you to sit there and create a backup routine, but you've got to physically run it each time, and whether it's going to have the features of multiple CD.
And Retrospect Express does come with burners from different companies. I think it comes with iOmega, comes with Sony, so that is the backup software that some companies include.
Yeah, I'm using GDK right now.
Yeah, the problem is that the company that makes the burner then has to buy the software to include with it, and that raises the price of it.
Sure.
So if they don't, in fact, one of the callers a few calls ago, if they don't give you any software, that makes the drive cheaper, and then makes you mad because then you have to go buy the software yourself.
Yeah.
Right. Okie doke.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Give us a call. It's 585 area code. 222-1180 is the number. If you're outside the 585 area code, you can call us at 800-295-1180 on the Choice One toll-free line. If you're a Verizon Wireless customer, you can use *1180. And if you're none of those things, then you're probably listening to some other station, so it doesn't really matter. We're taking your calls now. I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and John from Fairport on the line. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon to you, sir.
The other day, I was doing a reinstall of Windows 98. The machine had lost some DLLs and registry data.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than try and tweak each little piece, I decided to go with the whole 98 reinstall from the A drive and the CD-ROM.
Yep. The brute force method.
During the process, a message came up. It would be beneficial if you would do the FAT32 conversion.
Right.
I said, well, it didn't work before I started this. Maybe I should go ahead and try it, see what happens.
I love the adventurous ones.
Yep.
What happened? Okay, it works now.
Yeah.
I haven't tried putting out other programs. What did I do?
A good thing.
A FAT32 conversion.
A very good thing.
I'm going to listen to the answer now.
Yeah. The basic thing that happened was the old way of putting stuff on a hard drive was called FAT. And then they went up to FAT16.
There was a FAT12 stuck in there for a while.
Yeah. And then there's a 16-bit version. Then there's a 32-bit version. FAT stands for File Allocation Table. And it is the way data are put onto your hard drive. FAT32 is faster and more efficient than FAT16. Neither is as good as NTFS, the NT file system, that came out with Windows NT, but it is certainly better than FAT16. And in fact, under any version of DOS that any version of Windows that is DOS-based, which is 95, 98, 98SE or ME, it is the fastest and most efficient method of storing data on your hard drive.
Because none of those can go to NTFS.
And right. It's especially efficient for small files, like all the DLLs you have.
Like dang near everything you put on a hard drive.
You actually, you probably, if you'd taken a deep enough look ahead of time, you'll notice that you have a lot more empty space free on your hard drive because it's taking up less space.
Yep.
Right.
The only problem is that some very old DOS programs won't work with it.
Oh, okay.
Right. But if they are very old DOS programs, you probably want to update them or just stop running them.
I see.
Unless it is some sort of proprietary thing that you have to run.
Frogger 1.1.
But you know what? You can get new versions of Frogger.
That Christmas Frogger just
Thank
came
you,
out.
Gentlemen.
Christmas
Have a nice
Frogger.
Holiday.
You too. Thank you very much. That's an important note, though, however, is if you are, in fact, running FAT16 and you have the option to go to FAT32 when you upgrade, doing so will possibly break some very old programs, but will certainly be better for you. We're going to take another break right now, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Yes, you are listening to America's longest running computer show. Not continuously, understand. We take a break during the week. But we have been here for a tad over 12 years, and we're taking your calls on Sound Bites. Bert from Palmyra is on the line. Welcome, Bert. What's your question?
Thanks a lot. Congratulations on your move to Wham, guys.
Thank you very much.
Hope they're paying you better.
Never mind. Go ahead. Okay. What's your question?
Two real quick ones. Spam. Is there any way to get your...
It comes in a can. It doesn't taste that great.
Right.
But they make great turkeys, right?
Yeah.
No, is there any way to get your computer to imitate a bounced email?
Yes.
Back to spammers?
There's a matter of fact, it's called... there's a utility out there called Spam18. If you go to Google.com, there was a utility out there, like I say, it's called Spam18.
Okay.
And what you can do is you can sit there and... copy that email back into this program, and it bounces them back thinking that it's an address that's no longer available.
Yeah, okay. All right.
And also,
the other quick one was, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I say you can also just fake it, reply to the message with unknown
user.
Yeah,
but the headers will be...
Yeah, I was thinking of cutting and pasting, send a bad one myself.
Try looking for that spam 18.
Okay. Alrighty. The other quick one was, have you tried Netscape 6.2.1 yet?
No. How is it?
Well, I'm 49% into the download, and I'm hoping they fix something.
Well, you know, they're saying that it's super hot. It's based on the Mozilla engine. They fixed a lot of the stupid things they did in 6.0, and they're saying it's a great product. I haven't tried it myself yet.
That actually was a whole other copyright issue, that the guys that wrote Netscape were going to call it Mozilla until Toho, who owns the copyright for Godzilla, sued them.
Right.
And then apparently they've reached some sort of agreement.
No, it's open source now. There's nobody to sue.
It's just a name
they picked up. Who are you going to sue?
And there's still, in Netscape, I actually haven't tried it in version 6 yet. In Netscape, if you type about Mozilla, you get this neat little picture of a Godzilla-type monster and a little history of Netscape.
Bert, if you would, let us know next week once you get it installed, because one of the things that I had a problem with 6.0 is, besides messing up a lot of things, was I hated it that you could... As far as filing a bookmarker, all they would let you do is add a bookmarker.
Yeah,
you
it's impossible to use,
You couldn't file it under, which I'm still using 4.7, which lets me organize my things.
Well, you can organize them, you just have to do it in a separate step.
That
you can.
It's a pain in the butt.
But
you have
ridiculous,
to take a separate step. Let us know what you think. We'll be our correspondent in the field this week, Bert.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Give us a call at 222-1180 if you're in the 585 area code.
Well, I know this next caller isn't my bird because we didn't leave it on automatic answering.
That's right, but it is Casey from Rochester. Welcome, Casey. What's your question?
Welcome to Wham. I got a quick question for you.
Thanks.
Last week, I
got to ask you a question, though. What's the KC stand for?
Ken.
Okay.
Not Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, which I'm a big fan of, and I've got the reason we asked, we were on break, we saw the KC, and Nick was saying, what, you taught your bird how to answer the phone?
He's got an African gray parrot
that talks up a storm that's named KC.
I didn't know that.
Go ahead. What's your question?
We're digressing.
The question is, I upgraded a bunch of stuff on my machine last weekend. Everything worked great. I was out there with the wee hours of the morning. Wanted to do some service patches for Microsoft Office, which Office version 2000, which I brought in and did the download. I'm on DSL, and I went to, after everything was all done, I went and just to test things out to make sure everything was okay, launched Word, it came up, and then disappeared. And Excel came up and disappeared. Nothing would launch. I ended up having to uninstall all of Office and reinstall all again. I got everything back. I didn't lose anything. But
okay.
Did you rerun the service patches?
No, I didn't.
Don't. Yeah, don't. What it is quite possible that it was just a bad download of the service patches. It is also possible that you downloaded the service packs that were not for Office 2000.
Did you do the download manually, or did you use the Office Update webpage?
I did it manually. There's one spot on Microsoft's page where you can either update the Windows or update Office. And I did it through the Update Office. And I was very careful to read through and make sure that everything corresponded.
Let me hear that Office patch.
You can do, that's for XP. You can do an automatic update of whatever's needed through their website, and that usually is more successful. Although if there is some sort of problem with your installation, or if you get a bad download, you can easily mess things up badly. That's
right.
Why it's always important, no matter what you're uploading, if your system is at all important to you, it would be a good idea to do a backup first.
Yeah, and also often we've seen Microsoft will release a patch to the patch in a day or two to fix
never
Donald
be the first one. As Adam Osborne used to say, pioneers are the people with the arrows in their backs.
Yeah, have you guys ever heard of a site called DSLReports.com?
Yes. Yeah.
Very nice.
Great, 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 great.
That might work for our Springwater caller earlier. Check that out. It's a list of where DSL is available and what is available in your area.
Because it's not all from one company. There are a lot of different companies that are doing DSL. So, Jim from Springwater, if you're still listening, and if not, why not? If you're still listening, go to dslreports.com, and you should find a lot of really good information about that.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Give us a call at Soundbites, just the way Don did, all the way from Rochester, New York. Unbelievable, isn't it? Don, are you there?
I'm here.
All there. Right. What's your question?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, I'm talking on a cell phone in my dining room, would you believe, so we keep the other phone open.
Sure, and this way nobody's going to arrest you for not using your hands free.
Pull over
in the living room.
You got it. Anyway, for about the past 2 months, not continuously, though, about a day at a time, as long as I can stand it, as a retiree, I can stand it, I've been trying to install a home wireless network.
Oh, what could be cooler than that? What operating system?
It is a challenge. Well, are you ready for this?
Yep.
On my desktop, I'm using XP Home.
Mm-hmm.
And on my lap, I'm using the second edition, 98 second edition.
Okay.
I don't know if that's one of my problems.
All right, now the system, your desktop, now you've got the wireless unit hooked up to that? The hub, the router?
It's a PCI carrier. This is a U.S. Robotics 2440. I don't know if you're familiar or not with it. It's a card. It's a PCI card, and the antenna's right in the card, would you believe? No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the thing is, I got both of these to show. The green lights come on the modem. In fact, the desktop pings the lap pings the desktop.
Okay, so
both the green lights are on.
Pinging works, and they can see each other. Do you have sharing set up?
There is my problem. We've done all this stuff. I was on the phone with U.S. Robotics for an hour and a half, and they said, well, our equipment's working. It's your software problem.
The thing is, do you have NetBuoy set up in both of them?
Excuse me?
NetBuoy. It's a protocol that you'd use to talk between the two.
The wireless only uses IP.
No, you can use the NetBuoy, I believe.
Also?
Yeah. Well, here's what you need to do. If you've set up file and print sharing.
Well, you're on the...
Both
on the 98, there you do that. And the XP, it's a whole different wizard you go through.
Yeah. Right, and you did that.
Yes.
Okay. The next thing is, when you set them up, did you give them the same work group name?
Yes. In fact, it defaults to MS Home.
Yes.
Okay.
On both...
Yeah.
No, on the other machine...
It's work group.
It will default to work group. on the 98 machine, if you go into the control panel under networking, you go to the second tab and you identify it. The default is OEM work group or just work group, and you've got to put in a specific name and work group. Leave the very third tab empty.
Are you using a hardware access point, sometimes called a base station?
No, actually, as I said, this is all off a PCI card. It
right.
can handle.
I thought they had to go through a workstation.
No, you can. Turn one of your wireless workstations into a base station that controls the wireless network. But we've had a lot better luck with a standalone base station.
Well, in all probability, if he can ping, he's done that part.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like you were hesitating about that Windows 98 workgroup name.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, I'm just wondering if this will all end if I get IP or XP on my lap.
Well, if in fact the problem is that they're under two different work groups and therefore will never see each other, sure, that'll solve it, because when you put XP on the laptop, it'll pick up MS Home as the work group.
He mentioned one other thing, though. He's got, you say these are U.S. Robotics?
Yes.
Did U.S. Robotics, do they have a certified driver working under XP? The problem the only reason I ask that is because I know Linksys, I've got a client that has a wireless in one of the other machines, and Linksys hasn't been approved for the XP drivers for their wireless network card, right. And I can't get it to work right now.
Yeah, I wonder if that's my whole problem. What you say is true with U.S. Robotics, too. They say this has been tested with XP, but it's not signed.
Right. Yeah. See, that's the problem.
Well,
I just wonder if that's my whole problem.
That might be your whole problem. But first, I would check that work group name, because if they ping each other, that means something's working.
Well, I had mine working at the clients for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden it would drop off.
Are they
at least try that?
Are they also wired, or is it wireless only?
Well, wireless.
It's not getting a ping over the wire.
No. Yeah. It's all wireless. And then you can see when you look at the utilities there that they're sending and receiving.
Yeah, try at least starting with changing the work group name, and then let us know.
Okay. Before I leave, you've had a lot of conversation about spam.
Yeah.
Trauma Spam Killer I've used for 2 or 3 years. Excellent program.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. It's an excellent program.
You got to pay for it, but it's an excellent program.
You know, at some point, you got to admit it's worth a few bucks that Spam Killer costs to get rid of some of that junk.
No such a thing as a free lunch, right?
That's
you
right. Sam Stoffel. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, now you can get back on the road in your living room.
Trucking on into the kitchen.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with Nick Francesco on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Shockingly, it is Soundbites, and I am Nick Francesco sitting here with Dave Ray.
I'm Dave Enright.
Dave Ray, Steve Linton, and Rob Enright. That's not bad how I did that.
Yeah, you did.
Let's do Steve Ray, Dave Enright, and Rob Linton, and I'm Nick Francesco, and we're talking to Mill from Brighton, and save me here, Mill, save me.
Oh, hi.
How are you?
It's Bill, by the way.
Oh, Bill, I beg your pardon. That's entirely my fault.
Excuse me for a minute. I'm running a Windows 95B on about a 3-year-old system with a 233 processor and a 64 RAM. I've had trouble like crazy ever since I've put in a second internal hard drive with the idea of, in case the first one crapped out, I'd have a complete image available on the second one to go to. What I did is had no trouble with it going in and apparently being recognized, and I used the provided by Maxtor floppy to get a complete copy run onto the now drive D. Of drive C, which was my original, of course, and everything looked fine until I tried to use it, at which point I would...
Everything looked fine
feedback.
Until I tried to use it. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I would go into Explorer, for example, and put both systems up to look at the two of them and compare files to see if indeed the under properties, both files and both supposedly mirror imaged drives were identical. And by and large, just finding out it was true, before everything froze up solid and so severely corrupted everything that ScanDisk couldn't rescue me. And I had to do complete recovery, which I've now done about 4 different times with complete recovery, and still don't know what the devil's going on. Now, I'm going to, I guess, ask whether you would agree that there's no problem with, I've got two IDE connectors on the motherboard, and I used the ribbon cable, which was going to my original C drive, and put the new drive, D, on the same ribbon.
Oh, that's a problem.
But no,
is it?
Well, yeah. If you're...
Okay, because on the other IDE connector, on the other motherboard IDE connector, I have a CD-ROM and a CD-RW.
Well, there
and
you
that's
go.
A problem.
That's a problem.
Which I, oh.
You
which,
want to which, separate those. Matter of fact, both devices you want to separate.
Oh, because I had thought that you were giving advice before that suggested that I would always want to have, in order to copy from one to the other, I would have to have,
I'm
let's
different.
Say.
Right, it depends on.
Let him
on,
let me finish okay. a sentence.
If I were going to copy, let's say, from a hard drive onto the CD-ROM, I didn't want them sitting
right.
on the same
right.
Ribbon side.
Right.
But if you're copying from a CD to a CD-ROM, they need to be on separate ribbons. Basically, your source device and your target device need to be on separate chains.
When right. you're using IDE. So you have to decide how you're going to handle this. If, for example, you are going to burn from CD to CD...
Mm-hmm.
more regularly than from hard drive to CD, or you are going to say, you know what, anytime I burn from the hard drive, it'll be the C drive or the D drive. You know, what you might end up doing is putting your C drive and your burner on one chain, and then your CD reader and your D drive on the other chain.
Okay.
Now you can burn from the D drive to the writer, or from the CD reader to the writer.
Yeah.
Or you can mirror from the C drive to the D drive without running into any timing problems.
And what program are you using to mirror?
It's a MacStore disk that has a program on it, which all I know is just the installation disk for MacStore's drive,
it's
and
not
I don't
really,
know what that program is.
It's not really a mirror program.
No.
It's a copy program. It copies the contents of one drive onto... It's like Ghost, but it's MacStore's version.
Okay.
So it's not really a mirror. It's a copy at that instant. The second you reboot Windows, it's no longer a copy because Windows changes files in your C drive.
Right. There is software you can get that actually mirrors. That is to say, everything done on one drive is automatically and instantly mirrored on the other drive.
And would that be legitimate or would that give me a problem in that I was hoping to have a drive which would be a complete functional system if the first one died?
Then you want the mirroring software, but you want to make sure that those two drives are on different IDE chains so you don't have timing problems.
Yeah, we'll have to change that over.
There you go.
You may end up wanting to get another IDE or even a SCSI chain to have something different yet to burn onto rather than your primary
right,
chain.
Right. In the long run, you may find that'll be easier.
Okay.
But that should do it for you, okay?
One final question. I was told by MacStore when I called him up at one stage on this that I should definitely use the ribbon that came with their hard drive.
No,
because
IDE.
It's a so-called 80-wire ribbon. As compared to the ribbon that I had in my original one, which is what I tried the first time, when I traded it over, didn't make a bit of difference.
There's differences in the specifications whether you have the UDMA 60 or the UDMA 80 IDE specification
but
on that
But not on
drive.
His motherboard. He's got an older system which isn't going to amount to anything.
Right. In your particular case, the point is moot.
Okay. But I was even baffled looking at it electrically because you've got 40 electrical connectors on one connector. And unless there's 20 only that are active, depending on which you plug in, which hard drive you're using, it didn't make any sense going to the so-called 80-wire ribbon that looked identical to the other one.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The 80-wire connector grounds each wire individually instead of having one ground wire for the whole chain.
Oh, that makes the...
Yeah, that's the way the higher SCSI specifications work, too. The original SCSI spec, there were 25 data wires and one ground wire. And then they went to the 50-pin wire. It was 25 data wires, 25 ground wires.
Right, but in your case, that doesn't matter because you still only have, because of the other end.
Well, thanks very much because I'm getting awfully fed up with all these constant recoveries. And, of course, right now I'm running bare on my... protection program.
Mm-hmm.
Maccabee anyway, because it takes me over an hour to download all the updates and get back on board that. So at the moment, just to have an operating system, I don't even have that or Zone Alarm or anything else that I've got to laboriously download because of these miserable problems. But I guess you've cured it for me.
Good luck.
Thanks very much, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Well, I guess we're about out of time. It's pretty near the end of the show. I want to thank all our callers. I want to apologize to everybody whose call we didn't get to. Call earlier next week. We will certainly be back here next Saturday at 12:20 p.m. on 1180 WHAM. I want to thank Rob Linton, who kept us absolutely safe on the board. Remember to go to our website and vote in the poll and sign up for the forums. Give us your city and state. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray, although I'm never quite sure why. We will see you next Saturday on Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco for Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.